Welcome to Fried. I'm your host, Kate Donovan. I work with leaders so they can see the patterns that are quietly hurting performance and burning out their best people. In my world, burnout is blameless, burnout is information, and burnout is a signal that we can use to improve workplaces. Seasons 1 through 10 focus on individual burnout. Seasons 11 and beyond focus on leadership, culture, and the workplace. This podcast will help you understand what burnout is pointing to and how to start fixing what's actually causing it. If this is a conversation you feel your organization should be having, that's the work I bring into teams through keynotes, workshops, and advisory. You can find all my info at katedonovan.com. That's CAITDONOVAN.com.
Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Got each other on our side, plus all the folks at Fried, the Burnout Podcast.
Hello, Fried fam. It is episode 350 of Fried, the Burnout Podcast. And that blows my mind. I remember thinking when I started this podcast, if I ever got to 10,000 downloads total, it would be like the best thing that ever happened to me. And now we've done over 1 million downloads. We do close to 10,000, if not more than 10,000 every couple of weeks. And we've helped thousands and thousands of people around the world. And so I wanted to first start by saying thank you for being here. And second, I want to sort of reshare my story because it's been a while and a lot of you are probably new and you might be thinking, where did all of this come from? Who is this gal anyway? And so I'm going to tell you today. My name is Kate Donovan. I am your host of Fried the Burnout Podcast. I'm a professional keynote speaker, an author, an advisor, a consultant, and also an acupuncturist with a master's degree in Chinese medicine. And so I was talking to someone the other day. I was being interviewed by Lee Hayes, who's a big speaker agent here in New York City for her podcast. And she said, you know, your bio doesn't include all this really fascinating stuff about your background, all these things I didn't know. And I said, well, what do you mean? And she said, well, you started school at Boston University for college as a pre-med student, and then you dropped out and went to study Chinese medicine. What happened? And so I started thinking about the fact that those stories probably haven't been told here in a while, and episode 350 is a really good time to get us up to date with one another. So I'm going to do a quick recap of what got me here and then explain what I'm doing now, why I'm doing it, and how much I love to do it with you. So I was a big nerd in high school. I was also an athlete. I was the captain of a 0-16 field hockey team. Yes, that means we lost every single game, but we played and had fun anyway. I graduated 12 out of 600 people in my class. And yes, 600 was not the whole high school. It was just my class. I went to school in a small city in Massachusetts. And I got an almost full scholarship as a pre-med student at Boston University. So my major was biology on a pre-med track, and my minor was Eastern religion because that was something that fascinated me. In my sophomore year of school, I was one of the people that was being weeded out. You know, they talk about this when you go to med school, law school, et cetera, that they're weeding people out on purpose in the beginning because they only want sort of the strong to survive. Well, I was weeded out. I could not pass organic chemistry. I got a 4 on my first test, and that was 2 points for my first name and 2 points for my second name. And as a kid who graduated 12 out of 600, I did not expect to struggle that way academically when I got to school. So that, and I took a course on the sociology of medical school. We had to read a book about someone who was going through medical school, what it cost their relationship, what it cost their health. And I was reading it and I was thinking, this is not what I thought this was going to be. So even back then, I was making a decision against burnout before I knew burnout existed, before I knew that would be like a problem. And I changed paths. And the way that I changed paths was this. At the time, because my minor was Eastern religion, I went to see a professor of mine. Her name is Livia Cohn. And she is one of the world's foremost scholars of Taoism. And she was teaching a meditation course that it was a master's level course, but they let me take it my sophomore year. And I went into her office hours and I said, Livia, what am I going to do? I've been telling my family that I was going to be a doctor pretty much my whole entire life. And if I'm not that, and she said, well, just do Chinese medicine. And I said, what the F is that? And thus began the journey. That same year, my roommate, my sophomore year, bought me a Christmas gift that was sort of a view into how you can study Chinese medicine, what Chinese medicine is, all the different schools that offer it and things like that. Now, this was in the early stages of the internet. So all of this stuff was more readily available in a book than on the internet. And I started reading about it and my mind was blown. I was a total neophyte. I really wanted to jump into it. I dropped out of BU. I moved to California and I went on to do 4 more years of school and finish with a master's degree in Chinese medicine. During that time, I took a semester off and went to Argentina because I felt like I needed to. I don't have any other way to tell you that my body was just like, you must go to Argentina. My excuse at the time was learning Spanish, but I was living in San Diego, California at the time for my master's degree. And I was working in restaurants. Everyone that I worked with spoke fluent Spanish. So I could have learned easily in San Diego, but I did not. I felt like I had to go to Argentina. The day that I got there, I met my future husband. So I walked into a hostel. I was letting them know that I was there. I was checking in. I said, my name is Caitlin Donovan. And he piped up from the couch and he said, oh, are you Irish? I said, no, American. And he went, oh. And that was the beautiful start of our love story. 6 weeks later, we were engaged and we've been now married for almost 20 years. He, even though I met him in Argentina, was Polish. So when I finished my master's degree in California, I moved to Poland. I learned how to drive stick. I learned how to speak Polish fluently. And I worked in an infertility center for the first four years of working. So I was the only acupuncturist in the country to be working in a Western fertility center. It was very successful. I ended up on TV and in the news and in magazines and all sorts of crazy things. And I was in very high demand. So I had at various times, I had between a 3 and 6 month waiting list. This was really hard for me to handle. And during that time, I left the fertility center and opened my own private practice. So I was managing it all by myself. I didn't understand at the time that if I had hired a receptionist, I probably would have made more money. The only thing I could think about was how much it was going to cost me to pay somebody to be there. I didn't understand really how business worked, but I knew that as a solopreneur, I was in the top 1% of earners in the country. I was really doing very well for myself. I was paying back my American student loans at a rate that was much faster than my American counterparts. It was like working, but it was slowly killing me. And there was a lot of reasons that it was killing me. A, fertility was never really my thing. It's amazing what acupuncture can do for fertility. It just was not the thing that interested me the most. B, I didn't know how to say no to people so easily. So I was expanding my schedule. I was taking on too many patients. I was giving patients more than they were paying for. C, I wasn't asking for any help. Hyper-independent trauma response is all up in my body. So I did everything by myself. I refused to ask for help. I pushed through learning Polish by myself. I applied for my Polish citizenship all in Polish without my husband's help. I was putting too much pressure on myself to do everything alone. And on top of all of that, the environment, being in Poland, was not a good fit for me. There's a lot of wonderful things about Poland, the art scene, the music scene, the generosity of the people, the hospitality. And it's still just not my place. I will never thrive there. And so I didn't know that at first. And I spent a long time trying to adjust how I felt about being there instead of replanting myself somewhere else. So at about the 6 year mark, I said to my husband, I got to get out of here. I did not know at that time that I was already burnt out, because I didn't know what burnout was. I had never heard of it before. This was about 2013. We moved to Prague in August or September 2013. I was not expecting it to be as much of an exhale as it was. But the people of Prague, the people of the Czech Republic, the Czechs are a completely different Slavic than the Poles. They're a lot more relaxed. They don't care who you're holding hands with on the street, what kind of clothes you're wearing, if you have enough makeup on. If, you know, they just want to drink beer at lunch and go hiking on the weekends or cross country ski if it's the winter. They like their lives. They like their country. They're just generally like kind of pretty content people with what they've got. They don't travel as much. I just love them. So I was in Prague and I felt better than I had felt in Poland in the first couple of years. And then I started to crash again. And it wasn't until 2016 that I was reading an article. I think it was in Harvard Business Review, but don't quote me on that because it was 10 years ago. I was reading an article on burnout, first time I had ever heard the word. And I was ticking off all of the symptoms. I was like, oh no, this is what's happening to me. When I had that realization, the first thing that happened to me was shame. Because how can I, with all of this knowledge of Chinese medicine, with all of this background, how could I have ended up burnt out? Like, I know how to meditate. I do yoga. I exercise daily. I eat well. I spend a lot of time outside. Like, what? How is it possible that I ended up burnt out? And then because I'm a super nerd, I mentioned that earlier, in order to understand it better, I decided to download as much peer-reviewed research as I could find that existed on burnout at the time. Now, at this time, during this 2016 period, I started looking only into the word burnout and research that included the word burnout. I expanded it to chronic stress sometime in 2017. But my husband was doing a postgrad at the University of Cambridge at the time, and I downloaded, so I had access to the university libraries, which was like my favorite thing. I downloaded everything there was on burnout and I read it, and it took me about a year to get through all the material. I read all the books that were available. Most of it was by Christina Maslach, Michael Leiter, Wilhelm Schaufeli. And as I read through all that material, some gaps started to show in the research, which is normal, right? That's what a literature review does. Like, it helps you realize what's been addressed and what's not been addressed. And I didn't know what all the gaps were, but I could feel them in my body. Over time, I came to realize that the people that were researching burnout were all social scientists. So there was no one with a medical background. There was no one looking at the physical components of chronic stress. There was no one looking at why some of us end up in this chronic stress cycle and some of us don't. And this was the same time that trauma information started to become popular. So then I started to look into trauma and chronic stress and why somebody would leave themselves in that situation without fixing it for so long and not even notice that it was happening. This was a moment of reckoning for me, because I, up until that point, would have never said that my childhood was traumatic. I love my family. I call my mother way too often. We're all fairly close. We laugh when we're together. Even my husband is always saying, like, you guys are so lucky to have this. Even our cousins and our cousins' spouses are always like, do you guys know how lucky you are to have like cousins that you hang out with? This is not normal. And so my family is really close. And so I didn't want to admit for a long time that my childhood was tumultuous enough to lead to behaviors, brain changes, etc., that would keep me stuck in this chronic stress cycle. That being said, my father was an addict when I was born. My mother didn't have any parents left by the time I was 6 months old, and she was only 23. And so there was a lot of emotional dissonance in my household. I don't think that, and I know that, we've talked about this, like, my parents did not neglect us. We were always well taken care of and all of that. But emotionally, there was some inadvertent neglect, mostly because if you're an addict, you are not emotionally present. So you cannot meet any other person's emotion. That's not possible. And with my mom, she was so busy and she was just getting stuff done. She was living her life. She was raising two kids on her own. And, you know, like my father was there, but sort of half there. And so most of it for me was emotional stuff. My father went into rehab when I was about 6 or 7. And when he came out, my brain, for whatever reason, made all sorts of rules for how I now needed to behave in order for my father to not relapse. Right. So I took that on myself. This is a really common thing that kids do. This is not specific to me. Like a lot of people do this, and a lot of people create these coping mechanisms for all sorts of different reasons. So I started to realize that a perfectionist drive comes from that. The hyper-independent drive comes from that. My inability to ask for help comes from that. The people-pleasing tendencies, they all came from that childhood experience. And those were, for me, the main drivers of burnout. Now back into the research. I'm reading all this social science research, and it's saying burnout is mostly the workplace's fault. Well, folks, this is why I take a blameless burnout approach, because at that time in my life, I was my own boss. I've always been my own boss. I'm the employer and the employee. So whether or not it was the workplace's fault or my fault, there wasn't really a really thick line there. I was both of those things. So then I was thinking, well, then it's my, like, so basically if I'm the employer, then it's my fault. And that didn't feel right to me. So then I started looking into the research behind the connection between trauma and later burnout drivers, like those things, those actions and things that drive burnout. And all within that time, we decided to move back to the States. So there's just, you know, a lot going on. But I started writing about it and reading about it a lot. About 2 years later, I had finished most of my first book. I didn't publish it until September 2020. But this book was my own investigation into 7 reasons why female entrepreneurs may or may not burn out. And I learned a lot writing that book. When I finished it, I went back to school to get another degree in biobehavioral health. And this degree was all about how stress affects different systems of the body through biology, psychology, genetics and epigenetics, neurology, brain science, whatever, all of those things. And that was where it all sort of solidified for me. And that was where this like blameless approach to burnout, this need to find alignment for as many people as possible within companies, this is where all this stuff was birthed. Because what I started to see was, yes, there are factors in workplaces that will drive burnout to some degree. But after talking to thousands of people that have burnt out, literally thousands, not one of them truly believes that their workplace was the only thing that was happening. And then I started looking into people who weren't burning out. So what about these people that get through life and they don't burn out? And one of the differences in the people that don't burn out is that when things start to feel bad, they remove themselves from the situation. So instead of getting into a situation where you're in a toxic work environment and then thinking, well, I can protect myself from it. I'll just do more exercise, or I'll just sleep better, or I'll do more meditation. I'll send out loving kindness to everybody in my office. I don't have to be affected by that. I'm stronger than that. Instead of doing all of that stuff, they just say, wow, this is really like sort of a fucked up situation and I'm going to get out of here. So they like GTFO as soon as they can. And that was a really clear pattern that people that don't burn out, when things start to turn sideways, they change their situations. They move into something new. People that do burn out and get to the point of burnout often also change their situations. But because they don't heal in between, because they don't figure out what their drivers are, because they don't understand what really happened to them, they end up burning out again in a new place. They burn out when they open their own businesses. They burn out in a new company. Like they just end up repeating the same cycle. So I started to look at all of this information and think, we are telling workplaces that they are the ultimate drivers of burnout. In 2019, the World Health Organization decided on the definition of burnout, that it must contain A, physical and emotional exhaustion, B, cynicism and depersonalization, and C, a lack of impact or a lack of productivity. All those things are present and you have burnout, which is designated as an occupational hazard. It's not a disease process, according to them. It's not a diagnosis, according to them. It's an occupational hazard. And therefore, because of that definition, the onus is on the workplaces to fix it. But I kept talking to all these people that were working in workplaces that did not align with them, that were not healthy for them, that did not respect them, and they didn't leave. So should a workplace respect everybody? Sure. Should a workplace try to work towards as much alignment with each of their people as possible within their framework and their own bureaucracy and their own stuff? Absolutely. But sometimes you're just not a good fit somewhere. I was not a good fit in the entire country of Poland. It just doesn't suit me. Does that make Poland a bad place? No. Does that make me incorrect? No. That's like saying that you should be able to be in a marriage with every single person on the planet because, you know, you should just figure it out and you should align. No, you're not going to align with every person as a friend, as a partner, and you're not going to align with every company as a worker. And as companies, everybody you hire is not going to be the exact right hire for your company. That's just normal. So from that place, I have spent really the past 7 years diving into, on a physiological level, what's happening during burnout, on a neurological level, on a neuroscience level, as much as I can understand. I'm not a neuroscientist. I'm not a neurobiologist, right? From a biological behavioral perspective, what is happening here and how can we adjust it? And now what I've found, the word that you can find in all of the research, the idea that exists in all of the research, is that more alignment per person equals less burnout. More match with what you need and what you get for you individually means less burnout for you and less burnout for the company in general. Match and mismatch are the big problems. And everybody has a responsibility to deal with that match mismatch situation. If you are in a situation that is mismatched for you, it is not your company's job necessarily to fix it. If the match that you need is not something that aligns with their values, with the way they function, with their goals, etc. If you decide to work at a startup and then you don't want to work fast, that's not a good match. Are startups healthy? Not necessarily. But do the people that choose that place and flourish in that place love to work quickly and push the boundaries and be innovative and see what happens? Yes, they are risk takers. They are fast. They want the opportunity to be a part of something. If that's not who you are, don't pick that kind of job. And so, now, all of my work revolves around this. How do I get companies to realize what their standards are, what their structure is, and what kind of match that requires from their people? What kind of people do they need to hire and keep and retain in order to have people who are aligned with who they are as a company and as a culture? And are there things in the culture or in the system or in the structure that do not allow for some of the values or actions or behaviors that they want to exist? So sometimes there's some foundational things that we need to change. I had a great conversation with a leadership team a couple of weeks ago. They want people to have more autonomy, more accountability, but the structure for that accountability was missing. There was no way for people to take accountability because the things that we need for people to be able to take accountability didn't exist. There was no clear workflow chart. There was no clear owner responsibility chart. There was no clear, like all of these things that need to be in place in order for people to have autonomy didn't exist. So we needed to create that first and then start working on which people are perfectly aligned here and which are not, right? So all of that to say, when I talk about the fact that I think burnout is blameless, It's not because I'm trying to pull one over on you, or it's not because I'm trying to kiss the ass of an organization. I say burnout is blameless because burnout comes from so many different factors. There's your childhood factors, there's your workplace factors, there's your daily self-care factors, there's our overall cultural factors, there's environmental factors, there's all these places where mismatches can happen that add to a chronic stress level that can drive you to burnout. But they're not just you and they're not just your work. There's more than that. So I don't find finger pointing to be a useful way to look at burnout and find fault and make it change and make it different. That's not a useful way to do it. I have a web of causative factors that describe burnout, 6 buckets of factors that we kind of go through and see where can you make changes, where can you influence, and where can you not influence, but it's having a negative effect on you. And then therefore you have to add more of a buffer somewhere else. So for instance, like if you are a Black woman in corporate America and there is racism and sexism at play, then you have to create more of a buffer for yourself in that environment than somebody else would have to create. Is that annoying AF? Absolutely. Is it still true? Also, absolutely. So we each need to know how many buffers we need to create for ourselves and how many are actually sustainable and how many are a signal that like actually don't match here and I have to go. Like this is not going to work for me and I have to go. I have to go somewhere where I don't have to create so many buffers. You're always going to have to create a few, right? Nobody's life is 100% matched. That's just not reasonable. We're looking for like mostly sort of pretty good matches and then a couple of buffers. And that buffer might be making sure you get adequate sleep. It might be making sure you get adequate electrolytes. It might be meditation. It might be food. It might be exercise. It might be conversations. It might be boundaries. It might be working on people pleasing or perfectionism. It might be all sorts of different things. But what you need and who you need it with or who you need it from is unique to you and dependent on your specific situation. So if you've read some generic burnout information somewhere and you were like rolling your eyes at it, that might be because that particular piece of information is not a good match for you. Doesn't mean it's not a good match for someone else. It's just not a good match for you. So working with larger organizations, working with associations and sharing. Today, I'm just talking straight, like I have no script. I'm just talking about this. So it might be a little disjointed, but sharing the information that I've gathered so that we can eliminate blame from the conversation. We can create clarity for why these things happen and why they build up. And then from that clarity, we can create an action plan of things that will truly move the needle for your particular situation. And your means you as an individual, you as a leader, or you as an organization. We need to get in there and do diagnostics before we can give you generic advice. And what I love the most and the people I love to work with the most are the people that are not afraid to get all the way in there, name the true problems out loud. And trust me, if you hire me, I'm going to name the problems whether you want to name them or not. And are not afraid to get a little bit messy on the way to creating a better culture and a healthier environment for their workers that allows the people that are in the company to also do the work for themselves at the same time. That's my favorite. It's so fun, and I will love it forever. So, episode 350, my story, how I got here, why this matters to me, why I think this way. I hope that helps you understand why this work is so important to me, how deeply it is ingrained in my body and soul, and how important it is for me to help you remove layers of blame, shame, guilt, judgment around chronic stress and burnout, because those things are not helpful. They do not get us anywhere. And healing requires us to move them out of the way. So if I can help you move them out of the way through this podcast, through a keynote, through some advisory work, then I am more than happy to do that, because it is the most successful way to make progress is to rid ourselves of the shame, blame, guilt, and judgment first. All right, folks. half an hour of me is plenty. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being part of Fried's journey. And if you feel so inclined to help Fried grow so that more people get this message, so that we can get after this problem in a way that is lighter and less blamey and more nuanced, then please leave us a review on Apple or Spotify. Spotify is just clicking the stars. That's a real easy one. Or share the podcast when you listen to an episode that really hits you and you start thinking about someone else. Please share it with them. That really helps us grow. And if you would like to support my work and you know a company or an association, somebody who needs to hear this message and has an annual meeting coming up, has a leadership retreat, an offsite, an all hands, something happening, I would be more than happy to chat about how I can serve the people that are close to you and that you care about. Happy 350 to Fried. Thanks for being here. Bye.